From Broadway to pop culture phenomenon, a musical about the guy in the $10 bill continues to be the proverbial hot ticket in town. We are talking about
Hamilton.
I was trying to sing, but I can't sing. What am I kidding? Story of America's first Treasury Secretary, Alexander Hamilton. It's the story of his journey to America as an immigrant, his rise to power and prominence alongside George Washington, and spoiler alert, how he died because of the Veep Aaron Burr. It is told with rap and hip hop, incredible choreography, unbelievable writing, and the uncanny ability to make politics of 1776 feel like it is 2019. And it is, I saw it, magic.
Nice.
Absolutely magic. And you know Washington.
A little bit.
Literally. You know the guy playing Washington, and that's why we're here today.
Yeah.
So on this Dying to Ask, how Darnell Abraham made it to the biggest stage show of our generation, how fiercely he protects his balance, his personal relationships, and his health so that he can, you know, do a decent job in the biggest chance of a lifetime, how he sets new goals after what a lot of people would think would be the peak of a performance, a performing career. And then I'm hoping we get some dirt on you, my friend.
Good luck.
You have a very random, sincere connection with the star of Hamilton, and it's hilarious.
He's a good guy.
He's a really good guy. There's a lot coming up. We're really excited about this, and I have a feeling you're going to let this one go long.
I'm going to see what I can do.
It's a good show. You're going to be so motivated, and you're probably going to want to sing the entire way through it. Darnell Abraham is our guest this week on Dying to Ask.
I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and I am obsessed with knowing how people do things. They write the book, they start the company, they go from idea to reality. I call it the art of the follow-through, and I want to know how people go from A to B. This is the Dying to Ask podcast.
Darnell Abraham, welcome to the Dying to Ask podcast.
Thanks, man. I'm excited to be here today.
Yeah. So for our normal listeners, I don't usually do this section. This is a high honor. But we can dive into a little bit of why, I guess just kind of how we got this going. Why are we on the podcast talking?
Are we just talking to Jeff's friends on the podcast? I don't care if they're starring on Hamilton. We're just
sounds like somebody
Jeff's
lost
friends.
A bet.
Yeah, well, let's just talk a little bit about how we met and how we know each other, and just about some college days.
Yeah, so I mean, Jeff, you were one of the very first people that I met when I transferred to Azusa Pacific University. I remember, you know, you greeted me with a huge smile at choir camp. Yes, it's true. Jeff is a choir boy. don't let that rugged.
God. Whoa,
don't let that rugged, you know, beard, you know, and mustache.
You guys went to choir camp together?
Choir camp.
What?
It sounds like something out of a movie, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like this one time at choir camp kind of thing.
You got to learn all the music sometime.
Okay, so a couple of choir boys meet up at choir camp. And then,
You know, this guy, you know, Jeff, you know, you were just, man, just so welcoming. And, you know, because I didn't know anyone. And so it was really encouraging for me to just finally connect with somebody who's good peeps, you know, from the get-go, man. I mean, just your heart and your smile and, you know, like I said, you smell a little funny, you know, but that's cool, you know. I was like, you know, I can tolerate that, you know. But yeah, man, so we did that for a couple of years.
I think it was 2 years.
A couple of years.
Yeah.
Like 2 years.
I remember, so my first impressions were so intimidated just because your voice was phenomenal. I'm like, who is this guy? I'm like, dang.
Choir camp is getting good.
Yeah. But then just like talking to you and getting to know you, I'm like, wow, this is a solid dude. We're going to get along, I think.
And we did. And then also we were both in the same section together,
you know,
as baritones, bass baritone section.
All four of us.
Yeah, literally. I forgot all about that.
Yeah.
This is nerdiest yet most fun way we've started a podcast.
You're welcome.
So were you guys, help me understand, were you guys both wanting to be musical theater performers? Like, how did you end up in this?
I did it for the money.
I was young.
You know, I did it. You know, I always knew I wanted to do something in music, in the arts. I was heavily involved in community theater as a kid. So, you know, it just made sense for me going to college to study music. Something in the theater was kind of a no-brainer for me. And choir was an opportunity for me to do that. And, you know, they offered a scholarship, so that kind of sweetened the deal.
Yeah, no kidding.
For sure.
Boy, and, that money paid off for them, huh? That alumni newsletter looks real good now.
I feel like looking back on it, that's kind of one of the interesting parts of your story is we did choir together. And yes, like that's our connection. But I also did a little bit of the theater department. And you didn't do a lot of theater, but here you are professionally doing theater. How did all that happen?
Yeah, so, you know, it's crazy because as a kid growing up in Bakersfield, I was, you know, pretty involved in the theater scene there. And my parents sent me to a performing arts school, a magnet program, as you know, when I was in elementary school. So I did that for a while. Then fast forward to college and, you know, I started studying classical music. And so I was involved in the opera theater there. Yeah. And, you know, I enjoyed it. It was fun. I had a blast. And I can't say enough positive things about it. And then, you know, fast forward, moved to New York City, and, you know, I'm still doing the classical music thing. But eventually I said, you know what, I feel at home, you know, doing Broadway musical theater. So then that's when I jumped in head first, not feet first, but head first. And, you know, and you know, started auditioning and whatnot. And then
was that scary? Like at the beginning, first of all, moving to New York City and be like, this is what I'm going to pursue. I'm going to be one of thousands of people who are going to try to do this. What's that jump like?
You know, it was scary, you know, because, I mean, my wife and I had been living in L.A. For a little while before we moved to New York. So we were used to a big city, but nothing is, there's nothing like New York City. Mm-hmm. And so moving to a city where we knew absolutely no one, you know, that was intimidating. And, you know, there's a reason why they say, you know, if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. And that's just, I think, just the nature of New York City. It is a very competitive place to be. Everyone is there to compete. You know, you are meeting people who are the best in their field. And so there was that intimidation factor. But we kept our hands on the plow and we just kept at it and we started to make new friends and whatnot. And here we are.
So what were some of the first auditions you went on?
Oh, gosh. So I did some regional auditions. I remember actually in 2014 is when I went on my first musical audition. And
Whoa. You've only been doing this for 5 years?
Yeah, it's only been 5 years since I jumped into this thing.
Man, math always gets me. No. Oh, my gosh. Does everyone on Broadway hate you? That is amazing.
I don't think so.
There's nothing. No, you're the most likable person I think I've ever talked to. But so 5 years ago, you go on your first audition.
Yeah, 5 years ago, I went into my first professional audition, and it went really well. I booked it, but I decided not to do it, which sounds crazy, but it just wasn't the right time. You know, it really wasn't the right time. And so I decided to stay in New York and take some coaching sessions and classes and just, you know, get to know who's who in this industry. And then eventually I auditioned for Disney and a production of Festival of the Lion King. And booked it and was really excited. So I spent a year working for Disney down in Orlando at Disney World. And Festival of the Lion King is, it's like a musical review of the show, of the bigger Broadway show.
How magical, though, because that is like some of the greatest music, I think, ever.
Yeah.
You know,
it
so
really
identifiable.
Is. Yeah.
So
yeah,
did you do the puppets also?
Say what now?
Did you do the puppets in Lion King also?
I didn't do the puppets.
Oh.
I was too big.
That's incredible.
But yeah, so did that and
what would you play in The Lion King? Like what were some of the things that maybe people would recognize?
You know, I played the role of this guy named Nakawa, which means the prince. So at Disney World, they have four lead singers. And so Nakawa is one of them. And he is, I would say he's the equivalent of Simba in terms of, you know, he sings Simba songs and whatnot. So Can You Feel the Love Tonight, Can't Wait to Be King. Those were, you know, the two pieces that I would do. And had a blast doing them. But yeah.
So what did you learn working at Disney as a performer, as a human being, and as an aspiring big, big star? Because I'll bet there's stuff that you learn working there that definitely carries with you today. This is at least this is what I've heard from people who've worked at Disney. America.
Yeah, you know, first of all, working for Disney was an incredible experience. It really was. And it was, and I don't mean to, you know, overuse the word magical, but it really was a magical experience, you know, because, you know, this is an opportunity to help people forget for a moment. You know, people go on vacation for various reasons. Sometimes it's just to get away. You know, there were moments where the theater was filled with, you know, people who, you know, had kids, you know, who were battling cancer. So, you know, so they're there to celebrate that their kid has just received their final, you know, radiation or chemo treatment, therapy. And so that was an opportunity just to help people forget and celebrate life and to pour life into them. So so for me as an artist, it was a reminder that what we get to do is very special, and it's really unique. It also taught me, you know, the importance of self-care. You know, it is so important to take care of yourself. And as artists, we give. And at the end of the day, you know, sometimes we're pretty exhausted.
Yeah.
So one of the things that working at Disney taught me was the importance of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Unplugging.
Yeah.
Get offline, you know, just step away from the phone, step away from the computer for a moment and go for a walk in the park or go for a jog. And, you know, also it taught me the importance of hard work. You know, I always knew that. That's something that my parents ingrained in me. But once again, you have to work hard if you want to go somewhere. And so that was also another thing that Disney taught me, and also the importance of community and family. And I talk about work family and also my biological family as well. So there's a lot of things. That's actually a really good question. You know, it's one of those things you don't really think about until you look back. You're like, oh, yeah, it taught me this and it taught me that.
Well, and don't you think, I would imagine, like, performing in front of small kids, if you can keep their attention, you can keep anyone's attention. But performing, kids don't lie. Kids aren't polite. Kids don't try to hide that they're not really buying what you're selling, you know?
So actually, when I was in New York, I was a teaching artist at Manhattan School of Music shortly after I graduated from Manhattan School of Music. And so we would visit various public schools there in Manhattan. And I remember performing and working with the second and third graders. And they were great. I loved it. You know, some people were like, oh, the second, third graders. Have you guys seen that cartoon Recess? It's not on anymore. But it was Disney's Recess. And I remember the kindergartners who were like, they were tribal. You know, they were kind of violent, you know.
And the second, feral. Third graders were,
feral. You know, so these second, third graders, they weren't feral, you know, but they were brutally honest.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
So when they were done with you, you know, they would, you know, They were done. They were done, you know.
So funny.
But I love working with them because also they're so hungry. They're so inquisitive.
Yeah.
And their reaction
is as honest as it gets.
You know, really, if you're
doing well. I took this class in college, Voice and Articulation at the University of Missouri. It was taught by Dr. Lillian Dunlap, who, very famous woman who had worked on like the Eyes on the Prize series. I mean, she was amazing. So it was the greatest class ever, and she taught you how to use your voice. Not as well as you use your voice, Darnell, but we learned some things. And our final, you had one grade. And you go in on the final, and everybody's sitting around a table, and she led you into a room, and you had no idea where you were going. On the other side of the door was the preschool daycare program for the university. So you were surrounded by, like, 23-year-olds, and you had to read a children's book. And your grade was if they paid attention.
Wow.
And using your voice. I got an A.
Hey.
Yeah. But it was that same thing. I mean, you know when an audience loves the material and when they're kind of loving you too, which has got to be the greatest feeling as a performer in the world.
You know, I have to admit, you know, I love the unique qualities of doing what I get to do, but I really don't do it for myself. And I know it's like, okay, you know, you're saying that, you know, because you're in an interview, but honestly, you know, I do it because I am interested in doing my part to make the world a little bit better. And so if that is, you know, giving someone hope, you know, speaking life, or if it's like in a show like Hamilton, where, you know, it's a historical piece, you know, and it helps us remind us of our humble beginnings, mm-hmm. Then, you know, I consider that to be, well, may I say, a form of God's work, you know, and just to be able to, just bring people together. And so that's why I do what I do. And that's actually why I love to do what I do. And I've been fortunate to have been granted the opportunities to study and use my gifts, you know, to do this thing that I do.
Well, cool. I want to know how you, I can feel you're about to tell me it's time to go to break, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I was actually going to say it's time to go to break.
Well, you know what?
But I was going to put you on the spot, Darnell. Could you sing us into break?
Oh my.
How about something from choir camp, guys? Why don't you join in?
Do you remember Lord Have Mercy?
oh, Lord.
Oh, I'm enjoying this one.
I'm trying to think, how did that song go? What a way to put somebody on you know,
I remember the words to it. Yeah. I just remember the tune.
It was, in peace we come to pray.
There it is.
And seek the Lord today. For salvation from his hand. Are those the words?
I don't remember the words. I just remember the tune.
Our land. Let us pray. Let us pray. Lord, have mercy. Lord, have mercy. For we have placed all our hope in thee. Yes. Something like that.
Perfect.
I want to go to choir camp.
All right. It's time to go to break.
Okay. Do we have to?
We'll be right back.
Don't go away, Darnell. Friends, are you into this episode? I hope you're going to say yes.
I hope so.
Please screenshot it. Share it on social media because these podcast sharing apps, especially Apple. Yeah, I'm talking about you, Apple. They keep messing with the algorithm of how the shows get promoted and then suggested to new listeners. It's a unicorn formula. There is no YouTube video to crack. I have looked. I even had my 13-year-old kid look for it. And if he can't find it on YouTube, it's not there. Can't be done. But what we do know is that you grow this show. So if you share a screen grab of this show in Instagram stories or wherever you like to interact with the general public and you leave a rating or review, it's a big deal.
It'd be great.
Thank you.
All right. Welcome back. If you've listened to this show before, I'm famously underprepared.
Yes, you are.
For most interviews.
It's kind of your thing.
My job is to make sure everything is recording and everything technical is good. As far as the interview goes, that's your.
That's technically what I do. However, I think you're holding your own on this one.
Well, so far so good. But now we're about to get into Hamilton.
Yes.
Which I have not seen. I haven't even listened to the soundtrack.
I know literally zero about it other than
everyone loves it. And part of that's on purpose because I do want to see it and I don't want to like spoil anything. But yeah, so let's talk about Hamilton.
Let's do it. You know, well, we have to get you out here soon so we can change.
Seriously.
Definitely.
Seriously. I'm just dying to know, like, how does a guy who 5 years ago is going on his first audition, who then turns down the gig to go to Disney, end up in Hamilton?
Oh, well, I mean, there are a lot more details in between. You know, I think just for the sake of Hamilton and how I got here. So they brought me back in 2016, and it was for an initial audition.
Now, who's that?
And they are our casting director. Okay. Brought me in, and it went really well, and I had a couple of callbacks, and then I didn't hear anything. And, you know, and that's how it goes. You know, as actors, we go to audition after audition after audition. For us, it's like going to the office every day. And so there's no expectation whatsoever. You know, we just go on to the next one. So anyways, I didn't hear from them. And then I did a couple more shows up in the Northeast. And then I went on the Color Purple National Broadway tour after that. And at the end of, towards the end of that tour, we were at the Kennedy Center. And my agent gives me a call and she says, hey, Hamilton would like to see you. So I was a bit surprised because I hadn't heard from them. And so I was like, all right, great. So I went in and I had several auditions, or not auditions, several callbacks. And then eventually
so
I got
question.
The call.
Let me just say, I'm dying to know, like when you get a callback, do you come back in? Like what happens at a callback?
So typically in a callback, in this case, I was working on material for Aaron Burr and for George Washington. So, you know, I would perform the material, they'd provide some notes, and then I would implement those notes, and then, you know, they say, great, and then you get an email, and they say, hey, we'd like to see you again, and so that's typically how it works. You know, you're also, mind you, in the process, you're also building a working relationship with these people, because they not only are interested in whether or not you can do the role, but they're also interested in knowing what is this person, what is it like to work with them?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And, and Hamilton, is a very complex show. It's very, very, very complex. And so, it's also how does this person, deal with pressure?
Right.
Because it's a show that is moving, it's cooking, it's incredible. And I think that's one of the things that makes it what it is, in that, there's so many layers and there's so much to take in. And so as an actor, you're constantly reacting to the various things that are happening on the deck, or on stage, as we call it.
At this point, though, Darnell, in the process, are you falling in love with the idea of being in this show? Because for what you do, there is no bigger show to be in.
You know, I fell in love with the show when I first saw it. I remember telling my wife, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this show, and I didn't mean that in an egotistical way, but I really meant it in a sense of, you know what, if I don't get a chance to do it today, I'm going to make it a goal to do it at some point in my career. And I was very fortunate. And now, mind you, that was back in 2016.
Right.
And then 2 years later, I'm in the show. I'm not only in the show, but I had the opportunity to do the show with Lynn in Puerto Rico.
Unbelievable.
Which was incredible. So actually, when my agent called me and said, hey, you booked Hamilton, I was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome. And she was like, oh, and it's with Lynn in Puerto Rico. I was in the gym. You guys, I almost dropped the weight on my face.
Not the face. We need the face.
Oh, I want to hear more about that experience. What was it like in Puerto Rico?
Man, Puerto Rico was just amazing. It feels like a dream. It really does feel like a dream because, mind you, let me just say this, that Puerto Rico is open and ready for business. They really took a hit after Hurricane Maria. And, but it's such an amazing place. Beautiful people doing beautiful things there. And they're so resilient. And so it's really cool to go in and to participate in that recovery process. And Lynn is a superstar. And so, so it was just great to witness the reception that he received. Get this, every show felt like opening night. Mm. When Lynn would step out on the stage and say the line, Alexander Hamilton, the place would erupt in thunderous applause, that lasted for at least 30 to 60 seconds. It was incredible. It was like a rock concert, but it was really neat to be able to participate in a tangible way in what's happening in Puerto Rico. And not only that, but also to be able to invest in, the recovery for the arts scene there. Because oftentimes, let's be honest, I think the arts are the last thing that receive attention. And so to be able to take a show like Hamilton and to say, no, we are committing these efforts for, the arts fund, that was pretty incredible.
I can't even imagine. Just knowing the impact you're having must have been so rewarding. Talk a little bit about Lin-Manuel Miranda. I mean, I really feel like decades from now, people will look back, and I think they already do, but, you'll think of an Andrew Lloyd Webber, you'll think of a Lin-Manuel Miranda, and these individuals who inspired a generation to get into theater. I mean, like, there isn't a kid who can't sing along to Hamilton. And spoiler alert, you guys learn history along the way through a really fun way. I mean, like, what he did with just facts from American history, I find it mind-boggling.
Mm-hmm. The fact that Lynn read Chernow's Hamilton, you know, in such a short amount of time, and then when he finished
on
reading
a beach.
It. On a beach.
On a beach.
You know, and then says, hey, I think this might make a really cool show. You know what I mean? That's pretty indicative of how genius this man is.
He should have gone to choir camp, too. Oh, my gosh. That would have been amazing.
That big of a
right?
story.
Think of it.
Choir would never be the same. but I have to say, you know, Lynn is one of the most generous, grounded, positive, and selfless people I have ever met and I've ever worked with. When the guy walks into the room, he's like, hey, I'm just one of, you know, I'm one of you. You know, I'm one of you all. You know, I'm part of the team.
Are you like, no, you're not.
right. I'm like, oh, you're my boss. You know, because I'm like, okay, don't be weird. You know, because, you know, it's just so exciting, you know, to be able to, you know, to play opposite of the creator of the show. Your question, you know, was, you know, how do I think, you know, Lynn will be remembered, over the course of time when people begin to look back. And I think, you know, Lynn is going to, even now, you know, he's already considered an icon. With Hamilton and also with In the Heights, which predates Hamilton, you know, he was able to expand Broadway musical the reach of this industry. Because before then, people who were interested in the theater would come to the theater. Whereas now with the sounds of rap, hip hop, R&B, pop music, people, you know, are listening to the soundtrack and they're saying, whoa, this is sweet. I can follow this and wait, what? You know, it's musical theater, you know, uh-huh. So people feel, you know, I think intrigued by that. And so, so then they come and they see the show and then, you know, they're looking on the stage and, I love how our director Thomas Kell says, you know, this is a story about America then told by Americans now. So you have a stage where it's filled with, diverse faces, you know, it really is, the face of America that we live in today. And, you know, I'm a black guy playing George Washington, you know, that's very intentional. But that was all part of Lynn's vision. You know, how can I tell a story about our country's history, but do it in a way that's going to be cool, that's going to be accurate, you know, and that's going to, you know, also be memorable. And he did just that. And so, yeah, I can't say enough positive things about this man. You know, he's a special one, that's for sure.
Oh, without a doubt. You know, I saw it in San Francisco in March and had my two kids. I have two boys, 13 and 10, and my husband's total history buff. So this was a great, like, day for the whole family. And my husband the whole time kept poking me. He's like, that really happened. And finally, I'm like, the whole thing really happened. And that's what's so incredible. And, you know, I have boys. So, you know, there are weapons and deaths and people doing all kinds of stuff to me. They were enraptured. And I love hearing them talk about it now, even months later. You know, it connects with an audience in a completely different way. And the experience of going, your show's not easy to get into, by the way. Like, people wait. And they save, and they go, and that day when they go, they don't care where they're sitting because every seat is this amazing experience. So you must feel that when you walk on a stage. No pressure, you know, or anything.
No, right? No pressure at all. Well, actually, no. I will say the cool thing about the Orpheum Theater, there really is not a bad seat in the house.
No, there isn't.
And the really cool thing is they now are offering $95 tickets. Mm-hmm. If you go online, you know, you can check those out. And so, because there was a time where it felt nearly impossible to see the show. I remember back in New York City, my wife and I really wanted to see it, you know, but if you wanted to get a ticket to see the show, be ready to spend $800, you know, plus dollars, and then purchase those tickets far in advance. But so the producers have been very strategic and finding ways to make it accessible because it really is an American musical. And so so we want to celebrate that by making it as accessible as possible. And then also we do offer a lottery, you know, for every show. And so those are like $10 tickets.
That's great.
So that's also, yeah, isn't it? Right,
best, you know? Lottery ever.
Awesome. But once again, you know, just to continue in answering your question, you know, there really is a sense of anticipation, you know, when you walk out on stage and the energy in the room, everyone is just so ready and they're right there with you. And that is, that's exciting. That is really, really exciting. You know, the show's been out for about 4 years now, and it still feels like the show just hit the Broadway stage a week ago.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the really fun and amazing things about this show. I was going to say, you know, also another thing about, for me personally, which is pretty cool about being in the show, is where I grew up. The sounds of R&B, rap, hip-hop dance, stepping is also a form of dance. You see all of those elements in this show. And so once again, it expands the reach, you know, that would go beyond the traditional musical theater.
You're playing Washington now, but you actually worked as, you came in as the understudy for the show, right? And playing a number of roles?
Yeah, I was a standby, and so it's a little different from understudy. So understudies typically they're in the ensemble, and then they will cover a role. Whereas a standby, we are offstage covers, and our job is to be ready to go on at a moment's notice.
Oh.
And so it can happen during the show. It can happen 15 minutes before the show. And then sometimes, you know, we would get advance notice. You know, if someone's going to go on vacation or they have, you know, planned time off, then, you know, we'll get a heads up saying, hey, you'll be performing on these certain dates.
But you have to cover multiple roles, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so I was covering Washington, Burr, and get this, King George.
Oh! Burr. Wow.
I never got a chance to put on the cape. You know, I never got a chance to put on the cape. But I was ready. I was ready to do it. You know, it's just shit the...
So do you stand by for multiple roles in the same show? So, like, if George Washington or Aaron Burr left in the middle of the show, you'd be in either of those roles?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
That's correct.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
And what you don't know, Jeff, because you haven't seen the show, is that if you had to step in for the king, it's a completely different kind of role. Yeah.
Completely different. The king is like from Pluto. You know what I mean?
Totally. It is. I love all the roles, but I never expected the king to be what it was. And like, we still run around the house going, ba da 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 da. You know, like we are, my kids do it all the time. I mean, it's one of like the showstoppers in the show. And you never see it coming.
It's true. You know, and look, the king walks out on stage to thunderous applause. You know, rest of us, we have to earn it. You know,
yes, you do.
We have to earn it. But this guy walks out with the cape and a crown, and people are going wild. You know,
oh, it's so good.
But yeah, I mean, but once again, you know, that is evidence of the brilliance behind the writing of the show. But King George. He's comedy, that's for sure.
He's good stuff. Okay, I feel the choir boy over here. Then, by the way, new nickname, choir boy. CB, he wants to take another quick break. What I want to know is what a day in your life is like these days, and also some advice, because there are people who put in a lot longer than you have, even at this point in your career, pursuing a goal, and they don't have the success that you've had in a relatively short period of time. So I'm curious to know like what you've learned along the way that might inspire them.
Okay.
Sound good, choir boy?
Sounds good.
Okay. We'll be back right after this. Humble brag, which, by the way, is an oxymoron. I don't know why people say that. I think it's just so that they don't feel like they're bragging, but you are. And I'm about to. A recent review for Dying to Ask on Apple Podcasts was awesome. Did you see this one? It was from Attorney LVR. It is our review of the week. Maybe decade.
Yeah.
Okay. How did you come up with this idea for a podcast? It is smart, informative, informational, and still entertaining. My morning commute is now enjoyable and feels almost productive listening to superb interviewers who sometimes feel like a friend from college. How about that?
Wow. If we can turn around a commute, we can do anything.
Anything. And let me tell you something. College Fits was fun. We would have a good time. Please leave a review, and we might read it on the next show.
You know, the really cool thing is Wanda, my wife, is an incredible partner. You know, she's my best friend. I mean, she knows me in and out better than anybody, you know, maybe with the exception of my parents, you know, but she really knows me. So she knows when to say, hey, you know, let's put that down, you know, let's step away from that for a while. She knows when to say, hey, you know what, let's just kind of get away, you know what I mean? So she's really good about that, but also her support is unmatched. I mean, you know, everyone sacrifices to do something in life, but she has, you know, really been at my side. I don't want to say, you know, behind me, supporting me, because she's been right there with me every step of the way. And, you know, so the sacrifices that we've made, they have been made together. And so that's something else, you know, that that encourages me, and that also inspires me, because she put her career goals on hold so that I could pursue mine, and now she's getting a chance to do what she's passionate about, which is actually fitness. She's a fitness trainer, so she's building her business, and it's really exciting to watch her blossom and to watch her grow. And you know, I wouldn't be where I am today without her.
Well, I want to thank you, Darnell, for starting out section three of the podcast here, because that was about as good an answer to my next question, which was going to be about balance, as you ever could have given. I love it. I love it. And I love the fact that you honor your wife saying it does take the whole partnership, because I think that's true of a lot of us as we pursue dreams, whether you're an entrepreneur or you're a performer or if you're just, you know, a sales guy. You know, you've got to have, everybody's got to be on board for everybody's dreams, because it's not always easy.
It's not always easy. And, I've been down, you know, because, you know, I've gone to several auditions, you know, and they're just met with no's, 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 no's. And that, you know, after a while, that kind of wears on you, because then you begin to ask yourself, man, like, am I good enough? Am I doing something wrong? And mind you, you know, we can always learn. We never stop learning, you know, but there were moments where it was like, gosh, like I want to participate, you know, I want to be in the game. I want to participate, but no one has given me a chance, you know, and it really did feel that way. You know, it's not like, you know, I woke up one day and rolled out of bed and I had an agent and the birds were chirping and it was like, hey, you know, we have this, you know, exciting, you know, career in store for you. No, it was hard work. Hard work, and I had to earn my way to get to where I am today, and I'm still going. You know, I mean, Hamilton is a stop along the way. It's a big stop. It's a significant stop.
It's a good stop.
I'll be here for a while. You know, but really, it's not always easy. So having you know, someone like Wanda by my side, you know, has been a gift. For me, you know, because also the other thing too is, you know, when you're down, you know, you just, you know, sometimes you just want to give up, you know. So for her to be there and say, hey, you know what, no, don't give up, you know, you're doing it, you will do this, has also been really, really helpful. And so yeah, balance is key. I really do think balance is key. And my advice to anyone who's looking to pursue a career in this industry is surround yourself around people who know you and who know you really, really, really well. People who are going to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. You know,
which becomes tough when you become successful like you have. Sometimes people don't want to tell you.
Right. I think that that's why it's so important to know who your friends are. You know, the people who knew me before, you know, Hamilton or Disney or Color Purple or Ragtime or Next to Normal or, you know, all these other shows that I've done, you know, those people who knew me prior to all of that, those are the people that I still keep very close and near, because those are the people who are going to call me out and say, hey, yo, like, okay, like, you know, clean it up, you know, and you know, or also those are the people who are going to give me a hard time jokingly, obviously, who are going to, you know, who aren't afraid to tease and, you know, and just, you know, say, you know what, let's just go out and let's go to, you know, that hole in a wall, you know, place, you know, to have tacos, you know what I mean? Like those are the relationships that I cherish. So my advice is to, surround yourself around people who are going to be very honest with you. So there's a social aspect of this. There's also family, and the social circle can be your family as well. In my case, I have my wife and we have two cats. And
you're a cat guy?
I'm a cat guy. We're just crazy because I grew up with dogs. And so, okay, quick side story. So, Wanda and I, we were back in New York, and we were looking at adopting a dog. And so we're at the animal shelter because we said, okay, let's adopt. You know, let's adopt a pet. So we were at an adoption center, and then it didn't work out for the dog. There was a couple of reasons for it, and you know, so we were kind of bummed out about it. You know, but then my wife, she grew up with cats. She was like, hey, well, let's go check out the cats. And I'm like, go check out the cats, you know. So lo and behold, we walk into a room, and I see this paw reaching out through the cage, and he's chirping. And I'm like, oh, who's this guy? And he had like the big eyes, like Puss in Boots, you know, where it's like, you can't say no to this. Hey, did you see what I did there? That's a lyric from the show, by the way. And you know, 20 minutes later, you know, we have Simon in a carrier. Aww. And we're taking him home with us. And so, I love cats now.
Man, You're a cat guy.
I didn't dislike them before.
Washington digs cats.
This Washington digs cats. You know, I'm like, don't mess with my cat. You know,
and then
we later adopted Charlie a couple months later. But so we have two cats. You know, but that's part of the. The thing that, you know, helps me stay balanced. You know, I go home and, you know, I have two cats, you know, running to the door to greet me, which, you know, is really cool. You know, that's a really cool thing.
Or another Disney movie. That might be your next thing. So what do you do? You know, what do you do to keep your stamina up? Hamilton is such a physical show between the dancing and the singing and certainly the energy that a crowd going to Hamilton demands. What do you do to just make sure that you're staying healthy?
Yeah, so I'm fortunate in that Wanda is a fitness trainer.
That helps.
So yeah. It really helps a lot, you know. So she's able to provide, you know, some great workouts that help me stay, you know, just physically in good shape for myself, you know, because that's going to be different for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, she'll provide recommendations or, you know, say, hey, you know, you may want to check out, you know, these types of food groups and whatnot, and you know, and just making sure that you're getting, you know, enough water, and also, you know, yes, eat that salad because, you know, that salad is going to help, you know, not only just with the physical, you know, appearance, but also your body needs all these things. So there's that. There's also sleep, which is so important. It's really easy to get caught up in, you know, the excitement of it all, you know, but it's also, you know, stepping away and, you know, and making sure you're getting those 8 hours of sleep. You know, I don't usually get eight. I get about, I'm good if I do six to seven, mm-hmm. I'm good. Anything less than, God help us all.
How do you protect your voice?
You know, so I'm very intentional about how often I'm interacting when I'm not on stage. So I have to be very careful about, like, if I'm going to go to a baseball game. So I just went to a baseball game on, what was that? Monday. And it was a good game. I'm that kind of guy. If I'm at a game, I want to scream. I want to yell.
Hold on. You're burying the lead because I saw this on Instagram. You sang the national anthem at the game. We don't all do that when we go to a baseball game.
I was hoping kind of like pass by that.
Oh, no.
You're such a journalist, Deidre.
I know. Actually, I was just killing time at the doctor's office scrolling, but we'll call it that. But you did go in and, like, belt it out, you know, which was pretty cool, too. But that's interesting. Like, if you're at a game, you're not going to scream because you need to work that night.
Yeah, I need to work that night or the next day. And, you know, I love to connect with our audience members after a show. I really, really love to do that. It's just a way to say thank you. Thank you for coming. And because I recognize coming to any show, whether it's Hamilton or whether it's another show, you know, that's an investment of time. It's an investment of resources. And, you know, there are a million other things that people could be doing with their time and with their evening. So the fact that they want to spend that with us or anywhere in the theater, whether it's here in San Francisco or elsewhere, you know, I think it's so important just to say thank you. And that's part of my upbringing. You know, my parents taught me, you know, you always say please and thank you. No, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. No, sir. Yes, sir.
Right.
But sometimes I have to say no. I have to tell myself, you know what, Darnell, don't stage door tonight, you know, because you need to rest. And especially when I took over the role, it's only been a couple of weeks since I've taken over the role of Washington. I haven't gotten to the stage door as often as I would like to. And that's been a struggle for me, but I have to build that stamina of doing this show because it's very demanding, not just vocally, but also emotionally. And so in order to make sure that I am fit and ready to do the next show, you know, I have to sometimes say no to things.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a bummer.
Do people in Hamilton ever worry that they have peaked in terms of the opportunity? Like nothing will ever compare to it again. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, when you're in the thick of it, you know, I would imagine there is a temptation to think that, man, this is it. You know, I've arrived, you know. But the reality is something else will come along. You know, no one expected Hamilton to come along after Lion King or after Book of Mormon or after, you know,
the producers.
Other shows that have been, that have been, you know, wildly successful. But here we are, you know. So Hamilton will certainly, along with many other shows, you know, will certainly be considered a legendary show. And I think it'll have a very, very long life for several years to come. But I'm excited about what's next. I have no idea what that thing will be. That's the really cool thing about the arts. It's about creativity. And so you never know. Right now, as we're talking, you know, someone could be in a room, you know, working on the next best musical of our time. So we'll see. We'll see.
But do you think his name rhymes with Lin-Manuel? It might. You know what I think is such a great legacy for all of you, the performers, and certainly for Lin-Manuel Miranda, is that you have created this curiosity and love of a time of history that a lot of us kind of dreaded when we were in school, but have made it so attainable and accessible and desirable to so many people, including kids. You know, quick story, a couple days ago, I have the windows open, and I hear my two boys, 10 and 13, outside. I hear one of them, "I'm not gonna miss my shot." And then I hear the other one, "I'm not gonna miss my shot." I walk out. They're having a Nerf gun war, but they're doing it two lines from Hamilton. And I thought, well, if they're still remembering it, even as they're pelting each other months later, it was money well spent. And I love that they still love it and want to continue kind of living it in their own boy Nerf way.
I love that. I love that. You know, and once again, I mean, I think that's one of the really cool things about the show is, you know, it really is catchy. And even I, too, you know, when I go home, you know, or if I'm working out in the gym, you know, every once in a while, you know, Hamilton will pop up on the playlist. And I don't fast forward it, you know, or I don't go on to the next track. I'll listen to it, you know, because it's just that good. And, you know, and I think that's, you know, to be able, once again, to be able to be in a show like this, to do it every single night is fun. It's incredible. I just never thought that I would be where I am today. You know, I just started back in 2014 when I took that leap of faith, and here we are.
And here we are, all these years after choir camp.
All these years later.
All these years later.
How can we keep up with you on social media these days right now?
Yeah, man. So you can check me out on Facebook. My artist page is just Darnell, D-A-R-N-E-L-L, Abraham, A-B-R-A-H-A-M. So you can check me out on Facebook. You can also follow me on Instagram. It's D-Abe, so D as in Darnell, Abe as in A-B-E-N-Y-C. Or you can also check me out on my website, www.darnellabraham.com.
Cool.
Darnell, so much fun. Thank you so much, and congratulations on your success.
Thank you, you guys. I appreciate your time, and just thanks for giving me a chance to share a little bit of my story with you all today.
My friend Edie has this phrase that she says. She says, you wear success well, and you wear success well. And it's so easy to be excited for you, and thanks for everything that you're doing right now.
It's a tremendous honor, truly. Thank you.
Okay, so since we went way long, we got to make this tag quick. I am at producer Jeff.
On Instagram.
On Instagram.
Man, not that quick. I just want to say, look, I really enjoyed... I loved hearing Darnell's story, but I also really enjoyed learning a little bit about you. I had no idea about that part of your life, not to that degree anyway. It really was. And I think it's really great that, like he was saying, you know, it's the people from his past who kind of keep him grounded in his present. And clearly you're one of them, and I think that's super cool.
That's cool.
He's got to keep you, like, you know, grounded as this podcast explodes. Someone's got to do it. You can follow the show on Instagram at Dying to Ask Podcast, and you'll find me at Run Read Sip. Until next time.
Bye.
Bye.